This is a production of Cornell University.
UA meeting, April 15th, 2009.
You are now on memory. Everybody signed in?
Yes.
Okay, do we have any reports from YesA?
No. We'll talk about them during board safety.
GPSA?
No.
Yeah?
No.
Faculty Senate?
No. I don't know the results of the vote on the year. Do you remember extending the calendar? Do you know what the results are?
Well, it was reported in the employee assembly meeting today.
Yes.
That there was a vote on the calendar.
Yes.
That the school year would start on that Wednesday.
That's already assumed.
And that the vacation, it would be exchanged for Labor Day.
Labor Day. That what went through.
However, the implementation year has not been established.
But Labor Day, and not Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Correct. It was Labor Day.
All right.
And this is what was reported at the EA meeting today. However, the implementation date has not been established. We do not know what year that will start. So let's not spread rumors that it's starting this year, because it won't start in 08.
Okay.
To the best of my knowledge.
That's my report.
Okay, let's move on to the approval of the minutes.
Yeah.
Anybody want to move them?
I like the new format, by the way. Pretty trim. It's nice. I move that we accept the minutes as presented.
Moved by Marty. Any second? Second by Mark. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Looks unanimous. Okay. And now, I guess we will move on to the Gord safety discussion and resolution. I just got a phone call from Kathy's owner. She's tied up until 5:30.
We could move into something else.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Aze is on, he's not here yet either.
And he's on the Gorge Safety Committee.
Okay. How about we move towards, you want to do the consideration of the motion for support of the resolution for funding for capital project?
Thank you. Would you all look at that motion? And I've drafted a short paragraph for the UA support resolution support. And after you're ready, I'll read it. Is everybody ready? I can send this to you and you can put it up. How's that, Rodney?
Okay.
What program are you on? Or I just send it to your email. What is that?
RAO4.
Okay.
Hopefully I can get it.
What?
RAO4.
Okay. Okay.
Yep, I'm working on it.
Well, it just came up that it went away, so you have to get rid of your name on it.
Does that look like the UA?
Oh, there it is.
Okay.
So, that's... So I can read it out if you'd like, but whereas at its 11th March meeting, the Faculty Senate of the Cornell University has passed a resolution concerning the policies operative in the authorization of construction projects for the university, whereas the University Assembly supports the adoption of a new policy for governing construction renovation facilities, the full disclosure policy, which is advocated by the Senate in this resolution, be therefore resolved that the University Senate declares its support for this Faculty Senate resolution, be further resolved this resolution of support to communicate to the President of the University. So I move the resolution.
That's kind of a good question.
Yeah.
So the resolution.
So I have to second. Somebody has to second. Unless you want to second it. All right, then you got to second it for discussion.
I like the Faculty Senate resolution, but I'm curious, was anybody arguing against it?
Oh, yes.
And what was it?
The arguments were that that finances of the university are too complex for people to understand. That was the first argument, and therefore we shouldn't meddle in the financial areas of the university. And another person said that I can't remember all the negatives. There were three people who spoke against it.
We have to add to that certainly the finance of the university is too complicated for the administration as well.
Well, we can, but I don't think we can resolve that.
Yeah.
But that was the major argument. The major argument was that we don't know enough to be able to advocate changes in policies. But this the resolution, as you can see, is suggesting several, you know, mechanisms for making those policies more, what's the favorite word now?
Transparent?
Yes. I see that appearing in so many different places now. It's like synergy about 10 years ago. Yes.
I'll just repeat this. You know, you're bringing this. So the idea of the transparency and full disclosure policy sounds good to me, but in the second passage where it says to delay the construction timetable until an acceptable plan for financing is in place,
right?
I'm not even sure what that means. I mean,
right,
we already have to have a financing idea in place before we say it was just shovel.
Well, yes, you're right. There's some wiggle room in there. It depends on who you mean by acceptable, who is it accepted by. There are certainly plans in place, but I think it goes farther to say full financing, right?
Well, then, I mean, if that's your intention, full financing is in place. I mean, as a scientist, our buildings are extremely expensive, and they
right.
have to be debt funded. You can't even get donor statements with names on several of our buildings. So, you know, I think that putting that level of restriction in could be detrimental.
Let's see. Acceptable plan for full financing. Are you saying then that all science buildings should be built no matter whether they are funded?
No, it doesn't actually say full financing. It's an acceptable plan for financing.
Right.
But if you're leaning towards full financing, I'd say that I think science buildings, when they're decided to be built, rely heavily on debt financing.
I don't know. Let's see. One of the problems has been that the university has built many buildings with a much larger area of debt financing than is sustainable, as the word goes, which means that you have a large amount of debt, and then your budget goes into servicing that debt, so that when you have a squeeze on your budget because of decline in endowment, then it has to be taken out of program because you are funding buildings. Now, the question is acceptable. This resolution is attempting to encourage a balance between the idea of expansion of buildings, build it and they will come, in other words, and the problem that comes about when you've built so much that you cannot afford to support people.
And I think that's where the full disclosure policy becomes important, right?
Yes, you're right. So I guess acceptable is evaluate the financial status of ongoing projects. A comprehensive plan for the funding has not yet been established. Delay construction. This is speaking to a particular time. And if we don't, I think the Senate members felt, and it was passed by the Senate, who passed it, the members who passed it, not only these people, but another 20 or 15 beyond that, felt that if we speak out now that there should be more clarity about the relationship between debt financing and staffing, and that an imbalance which has occurred in the past would be avoided in the future should there be more information at the outset. So acceptable then would be spread across a wider swath of the university than just a core of administrators and trustees to approve it.
And on this note, they may want to include a historian of science in the discussion, because actually there's an inverse relationship between the so-called quality of the lab and the success of science that comes out of it.
This is a science speaking, by the way.
Yeah. Like, although there's exceptions. Truly in the history of science, when somebody gets a big institute, it's usually the end of the
But I don't think this is an issue about science or not science. In fact, the one big science department that was a building that was funded, the Weill Hall, right, was funded, was a building that came in. Why?
Initially, there was, I don't believe there was full funding.
Oh, no, there wasn't full funding. It was debt financing. Debt financing of it. And I don't know where it says full funding. Let's see. There's sufficient funding required to undertake substantial amount of debt financing. Okay? In other words, it's speaking to a particular problem now. Funding of the construction and operation of each building before construction begins. Now, that doesn't say that it can't include some debt financing. I happen to know that the facilities department of the university, for example, has for 20 years or more tried to encouraged the construction which only has built into it a plan for funding of maintenance, right? And if you don't have that, then the maintenance budget, for example, comes out of the general maintenance fund, which means that for a building that doesn't have, you know, a good chunk of money to support maintenance, it is being supported by decreasing the amount of funding for other buildings that are around. Now, I'm not arguing that in this, the Senate isn't arguing that in this resolution. I didn't even draft this resolution. What is suggested is that there be more transparency in how these decisions are made. Right? Not that we should take a swipe at science buildings.
No, I know. I was just using that as to make sure that this wasn't intended.
Yeah, okay.
I'll only choose that time.
Right. Any other questions? It's up to you what you want to do. Take a vote. I don't call for a vote.
Are we ready to vote? All in favor? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Opposed?
Abstentions?
Three.
Okay.
And that's a quorum, right?
What?
That's over half. Okay.
So we're at over here.
Yeah. Okay.
This one?
Yes. There must be more than three abstentions if there are only six votes for, or unless you didn't vote.
Oh, I didn't vote. Sorry. Make it seven.
Okay, seven.
703.
Okay. Oh, okay. That's that.
Go back to 603. Let us move on to the next discussion on the BUHS resolution and the UA committee structures.
Yeah, so we had met Marty, Seth, and I about this. In the last meeting, we brought this forward. We were having a discussion basically about our committee structure and whether or not this wanted to bring forward a resolution that was contrary to that and kind of the appropriate role of our committees and whether or not that works in light of the fact we've been doing kind of doing ad hoc liaison type positions as kind of we decided that the best form for this to take was very similar to how we structured the sustainability committee, and that is you have one liaison that is appointed within this body, and then the committee is formed of and four members from each of the constituencies. That when an issue area comes up, that committee can be quickly brought together and to discuss, et cetera, the appropriate personnel. I forget who else is mentioned in this. Constitutes that appropriate personnel. Either two individuals that we met. So this was kind of our solution to this. It's in line with our charter, and it also seems to kind of have a streamlined approach to somewhat for our community structure. Marty, do you have anything to add to that?
Well, somebody want to move a resolution, or are you? We can have a discussion.
Move it.
Moved by Mark, seconded by Randy. Discussion.
Under the gorge.
Everyone ready to vote?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. All in favor? 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Opposed? Abstentions?
Yeah, one more.
Yep. 10-0-0. And the campus code of conduct to prohibit swimming in gorges.
The important part is
do we have copies of this?
There's a limited amount over there.
So you can zoom in a little bit.
No, I have one. I have one. I was just saying to Randy.
Who would like to lead this discussion, Kate?
I don't know exactly which format you guys want to go in. Rachel Dorfman Hemlich from the CJC and apparently Cassie's owner is going to try and make it. I don't know if you want to go side to side or set up a formal speaking format. Let's start with, how about the students, since they're both present?
Okay.
And then we can go on to plantations and hope that CJC arrives.
All right. So from the student's perspective, this is actually quite interesting for me, who was heading up the Student Assembly Ad Hoc Committee on the Gorges, because what we were sort of taking was an educative response to the Gorges, as well as seeing what we can do in terms of mediating the danger, in terms of not necessarily going all out and arresting everyone that got near the Gorges or touched the Gorges or did something like that, but more or less trying to show students that, you know, it could be violent or it could be dangerous if you actually went swimming in the Gorges. And so for us, this is sort of a, it seems like, at least coming from what we said at the Student Assembly meeting and we got other students' responses, it seems like what we were sort of looking for, this gave us that and so much more that we did not want. So we're trying to figure out, is this the middle ground? Is this what we want? Some of the questions that were brought up from the students were, well, does this mean that they're going to be police there all the time? Because is it going to be taken off of the city police's jurisdiction as well? Because of the touch issue that was brought up back in the fall about, well, whose property exactly is the gorge itself? So there's a lot of issues as, you know, okay, we can regulate this all we want, but what's going on the other side of things? Additionally, in terms of looking at what else, based on the language in here, you know, what students are wondering, what is safe, a designation of what is safe. And, you know, given from my conversations with some of the officials, you know, I sort of understand where officials are coming from and saying this is what we want, but there's no sort of university response that's going to be going along with this as in terms of this is what you can do, this is what you can't do. Additionally, what about, you know, it says BB Lake here, but we've got swimming set up, we've got canoes set up, so are we getting rid of all that because it's considered water on campus? That was another question that students had.
We were also talking about what would constitute bathing as opposed to diving as opposed to walking. So would you get in trouble for walking around the outside of the gorge? Would you get in trouble for putting your feet inside the gorge? What exactly?
Inside the water.
Inside the water, anything like that. There's not really a specific idea as to what could get you in trouble, because you could as much hurt yourself by walking along them and slipping into the gorges as by jumping off the gorges. So basically the whole student assembly voted, and they said that they were not in favor of this resolution 15-1-1. They thought that this just took it way too far. It's not clearly outlined as to how this is going to be enforced at all. We don't even know who's going to enforce it, like Asa said, either Cornell police or Ithaca police. And we also don't think that historically people have been allowed to swim in the gorges. And we don't want it. It's been a central part of Ithaca culture during the summer, especially. So I don't know if this new resolution is really going to be able to be enforced, and if it's going to take away from the historic part of Cornell campus.
And two final things. Talking about one of the questions is, you know, when we speak to police or some student assembly representatives, it's, oh, no, there's good faith. This is just so that it's in the law, and then I promise we're not going to be down there, we're not going to be doing this and that, but, you know, is everyone that's going to go touch the water, are they going to get JA'd, is this going to go on their record? There are those sorts of issues that we need to understand. And also, I forgot what I was going to say, but I'll come back.
And we were, finally, we were also just saying that this could actually hurt more people, because if it's, if this is a violation and people are going to be patrolling it during the day, you can pretty much bet that there will not be that much activity there at night. So that could, if other students decide to get inebriated or do something stupid, they would go at night and it would further increase the risk of getting hurt. So it could also heighten the risk for students instead of reduce them.
Okay, you're the proposer of this resolution. And you were at all the debates. Can you say anything in response to this to talk about what kind of debate went on before we have the responses of the other?
Well, it's very much laid out in the bill. It's more about keeping punitive damages in-house. The theory was the city has the power to go with ticket people, would we rather have our students going to City Hall or keeping it within our own university? And this, as you guys all know, we had them talk in fall. This came after a debt this past summer, and that was kind of the final draw that something needs to be done. And as they brought up, it was very difficult of thinking how we could make it safer. So this is just kind of the end result. Perhaps Todd would have more insight as to... I kind of forget what we exactly discussed last fall, but there's a few more points.
We talked about it twice this year, right? So this semester.
We briefly touched it. We didn't...
Oh, you haven't talked much about it.
No, we haven't covered this in CJC since really the past few months. Like, this bill's been waiting for the most part in wording.
Yeah. Oh, okay. What does it mean to enter water?
To go, the designation, correct me if I'm wrong, Todd, is Cornell owns the gorges.
Right.
But the city actually owns the water.
State of New York Department of Environmental Conservation.
All right, so...
has jurisdiction for all
the
water.
Right, I don't know, but what does it mean to enter the water?
I haven't been in attendance of any judicial committee meetings.
Right. So the CJC comment on that is apparently the individual who died was sitting in the water. He was waiting. He wasn't actually out swimming or diving. And so then it became a very fuzzy question of if, say, the police start to go down to the gorge and everyone just stands up and stops swimming it, but they're still in the water, how do you enforce if they're actually in the water? So if you're crossing... I'm not familiar with the gorges, but say you're crossing a path that you have to cross the water, then that's one of the things that's left undefined as to how long you have to be in the water, if they catch you in the water standing there, or do you have to be wet?
Right. So it could. I remember when we had a discussion about this last fall, entering the water was as simple as putting your feet in it. That is, wading or anything of that sort.
Do you have any maps with you?
I'm sorry, I didn't bring any maps.
But the other thing that keep in mind, I don't know whether the revision of the codes that we put in place extend Cornell's the code's jurisdiction outside of the boundaries of the university. So one wouldn't have to specify on or traverse the campus of the city in the city of Ithaca. One could just say any waters. But so it's curious that they decided to limit it to just that portion of the waters that were within campus jurisdiction.
So can I follow up with a couple things? So you said that this is a response to the death over the summer last
yeah.
year. Somebody who you said was sitting in the water. So when I read this is swimming and bathing. Remember, this person dies not even doing what this is addressing.
Well, no, the point is that entering water is sitting with your feet in it.
Okay.
That's entering.
Okay.
Wading is also entering.
So we're going to apply everything if you enter. So that would address then what you were saying.
Mm-hmm. Right.
If you get your feet so much as in the water, that's a violation.
Right.
This is adopted. The other thing, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
One other thing. It's my understanding, I've talked to a number of people recently about this. So the revision of the code has extended the university's powers to look over students off of campus. But being able to, this doesn't need to be in place to actually enforce the city ordinance. The city ordinance is there always, right? And that's sitting there. We don't need this. And we have disorderly conduct already in the code. And it's been suggested that this sort of conduct might itself be able to apply to, you know, improper activity. Like, this is not even necessary.
The reasoning behind that was that this would specifically make it aware that it was illegal, because students would say, you know, this has been going on before a few years ago, students didn't get GA for this, why now, why all of a sudden? So just make it very explicit. The intention of the CPD.
I think the wording is so nebulous that it's impossible for me to vote positively. So I wonder if I go into Beebe Lake and get a wash tub full of water and bring it to one of the dorms, and a bunch of people either enter or bathe it. So, the old philosophers were wondering, what's the water of Fall Creek? Is it still the water of Fall Creek with, you know, all the spring water, you know? So to me, this doesn't say anything. or it allows for everybody to be JA.
I mean, to echo that, I think this is entirely too vague. I don't know really specifically what any of those words mean, how it would be implemented. I agree, Randy, that I cannot, in good confidence, vote positively for this. I also just, you know, not. I think any death is certainly a tragedy. It's awful, absolutely awful, that people unfortunately pass away in the gorges. That being said, there are often decisions that are made and so forth, that you have this trade-off between an individual having liberties to do certain things and understanding that there are certain risks involved with those liberties. And although, again, it's tragic, I think this is something that part of Cornell's, the character of the university and the being in the environment is swimming in gorges. And I think it's very unfortunate to see that kind of left by the wayside.
Also, I just wanted to, with Beebe Lake, like you said, there's the news and people are in the boat. Is that a violation to be up in a boat?
That's our question. It's not a violation. That's a complete thing. This is referring to touching the water, being in the water.
Hey, what about the
canoe? Well, it says for the purpose of swimming or bathing, so I would exclude the boating.
Okay. Well, I'm a little familiar with the groups that go there, and they also do wet exit practice, which involves capsizing a kayak purposefully. And actually, I think the reason that they do that is because risk management at some point in the past told them that they need to have people demonstrate they can get out of the boat pit before they can be allowed to paddle through that.
But that's part of the course. I mean, that's part of the group, right?
Yes, but it involves swimming.
So the purpose is not swimming or bathing. It is
crazy.
Swimming
there is
part.
It would be
interesting to hear what Kathy's take is on that. So then somebody that walks in, that's getting VA for this, says, my intent wasn't swimming, my intent wasn't bathing, my intent was to have a religious experience.
I wanted to continue on what Ari was saying. If the university makes a policy that students are forbidden from being in the gorges, you know, regardless of the wording, swimming or bathing, what have you, that means that the university is also, you know, barring itself from taking precautions to make students safer in these places, because that would otherwise be seen as contradictory to, you know, this amendment to the resolution. So students could not partake in practices, you know, for canoe safety, where they have to swim through mucky water as practice, just in case they do capsize. And we can't do things like put posters down in the gorge saying, "Don't swim here. This is worse than swimming here." But, you know, they're both forbidden. So I think the policy of the university should be to make students safer. And I do think this, to some degree, will be an unenforceable mandate. And, you know, I know a number of students. I've tried to talk to students over the last couple of months through Facebook and person. I know students who blatantly disregard this and go down there. And, you know, I'd like to see the university take steps to protect them instead of just barring them outright from swimming in any of these waters.
So, like I said, past week or so, I've talked to a number of people at the law school, and say that students taking an interest in this would be an understatement. So, I mean, I've got a whole list of things people have come to me saying, but I want to introduce one person. His name is David Kronheim.
Can I stop you for just a second? Todd, did you want to?
Yeah, I've been waiting for an opportunity.
Okay.
Probably about 10 or 15 things that I'd like to, if everyone will allow me to respond to a number of different things. First, I think it's important that everyone realize that this is one of a number of safety initiatives that the university is working towards or already implementing, and each are meant to comprehensively address safety issues. So it shouldn't be viewed that this is the only way that the university is responding to the safety issues in Catfield Gorge, or in Falky Gorge, it's not bad, Catfield Gorge. There's this multifaceted approach that's going on. And that is going to involve orientation weekend and having a different message. You know, people were talking about the history, the legacy of people swimming, and part of that is being perpetuated with orientation leaders taking the freshmen out and saying, you guys got to go swim in Falky Gorge, and they do, and that needs to change, because people are bringing people, you know, students are bringing people down to these areas and putting them at risk, and that is one of the ways to change that legacy, that history. And so to say that this would impact, that these changes of not allowing swimming in Falky Gorge would change that legacy of what Cornell is, we agree wholeheartedly. And because three people have died down there, there's a clear need to make some changes down there. You know, so that's one facet of this. There's going to be educational signage that is going to be put up going down to the gorge to let people know about the hazards. As part of making it clear that the university, that you know, going into the water from the bottom of the Falky Gorge Trail, you're taking a risk. We're planning, I'll say this is somewhat fund independent, but we're planning on creating an end of the trail at the bottom of the Falky Gorge Trail, saying this is where the trail ends. And when you go beyond this managed area, you're stepping out into an area where it isn't being managed. And there's no maintenance, there's no trail. And then this is one additional tool for those people that don't heed all of those warnings to be able to see that they're enforced, and it's for everyone's own safety. And I think that this is very much an important consideration. When people are going down there and swimming, they're risking their own lives, they're risking their friends' lives, because what friend isn't going to be there seeing one of their friends go into the water and not come up, that isn't going to want to go save them? And right after that happens, people are calling emergency services, and they're coming down and putting their lives at risk in trying to save these people. So there's more at stake than, you know, people that are just going down there to have a good time, and we're taking away this privilege that people are enjoying down there, because there's ramifications beyond just individual when they're taking those risks. There was a question about paths. Do any paths cross the water? There's only one official trail that takes you down to the bottom of Falky Gorge presently. And when I say Falky Gorge, I mean from the Beebe Lake Dam to Stewart Avenue. And that is where a majority that is the area where the three swimming deaths have occurred. And that area is part of Cornell Citation's jurisdictional responsibility within Cornell. And the only trail that is official, that takes people down to the bottom of the gorge, is from the south side, downstream from the suspension bridge, starting right in the Fiji House parking lot. And so there was a question of whether or not there were any trails that allow people to go across these waters. And I can say for Catskill Gorge, for Beebe Lake, and for Paul Creek Gorge, the answer is no. One of the questions that came up about the language that said within the city of Ithaca, I think that it's important to designate that because we don't want it to be all the Cornell property. We have a research and education mission that we provide to Cornell students and faculty, and McLean Bog, for example. Students want to go out there, they need to learn about the bog, you need to be in the water. We're not saying it needs to be illegal to be in all water on all Cornell property, because we own a lot of areas outside that are wetlands or ponds or streams. We're talking about the areas that are dangerous, you would have to ask Kathy Zoner more specifically about why it says the city of Ithaca. I think that it is because that is where it's illegal presently. The city of Ithaca has that law that says it's illegal to swim or bathe in these waters. So this is basically adding on to that.
Clarification on that law, sure. And then I'll let you finish. The reason it says city of Ithaca is Ball Creek Gorge and Cascadilla Creek. As they extend on, they eventually leave Ithaca, city of Ithaca, and they become state. So what?
They extend out into the town of Ithaca jurisdiction.
I know, but eventually as you go down to Fall Creek, it's still called Fall Creek, but it's not in city jurisdiction anymore.
Town of Ithaca.
Okay.
Town of Ithaca. And that includes Flat Rock, I suppose.
Flat Rock is in the town.
That's what I meant. It's town of Ithaca is Flat Rock. And people are swimming there all the time.
Kathy should be able to speak to it, but the city of Ithaca has a code that says you can't swim within any of the waters within the city of Ithaca. And so I have a feeling that is why that specifically says city of Ithaca, because it is in part helping Cornell enforce what the city of Ithaca has been unwilling to do so far. The other mention, I think that it's important, somebody had said that they didn't believe that the student last summer had died because he was swimming. And from what I understand, he was swimming. And it's my understanding all three deaths so far were a result of swimming. The last thing that I want to mention, Sergeant Scott Salino, one of the Cornell police here, and is involved with rescue, and he's been doing it for over 20 years. And he had sat in on a Friends of the Gorge meeting several months ago, and we were originally wanting to know and ask you, is there any place that is safe to swim? That was basically the premise of the question. And he said, I'm the diver that goes looking for the bodies when, you call it search and rescue, but by the time that they get there, it's kind of a foregone conclusion about what they're doing. And I certainly can't do justice to the story that he gave, but imagine in scuba gear with a lifeline up to the surface, roped in constant communication with additional EMS folks on the shore, and so he's not anywhere close to being in the same position as just somebody that's swimming. And he said he never had ever been that scared in his life. And he's down in the hole where the people want to swim underneath the suspension bridge in Paul Creek Gorge, and he's painting this picture of trees and tree roots and deer skeletons and shopping carts and rocks and overhangs and underhangs and turbulence, and he's being smashed up against these rock walls and practically unable to move, and also explaining to us that every hour of the day the water can change, because the volume can change, they can change the depth of Beattie Lake because of how they manipulate the dam, the hydroplane can change, you know, so day after day it can seem sublime and safe to swim in these areas, and then, you know, the fifth time that you're out there, it can be a totally different situation. And right now, that culture that is here in Cornell is bringing every new freshman out to that potential tragic location. And it's just, I realize that there's problems, you know, with enforceability, with vagueness, and so I'm not suggesting that there can't be improvements to whatever, but there's an absolute critical need that a change to the code of conduct needs to be made in order to protect students that will be disregarding this for their own personal safety and the safety of others.
So maybe I'll just finish. I agree that, you know, safety is a concern. Everybody I talk to, you know that there's safety issues, but there's other issues at play, and, you know, liberties and rights and stuff. So Dave Kronheit can speak better than I can on some of these things, but be allowed to speak.
Thank you. Ed asked me to come here today. I'm a second-year law student. I'm also was class of 7 here. And I stated before I talked, I'm not an attorney, I'm not offering any legal advice, I'm just here to point out some potential issues that might arise in this change to code. I've spoken with two land use and property professors, as well as with other attorneys, as well as my own research on the issue. The biggest issue I think that Cornell would face by trying to add this to the code would be that it would violate a prescriptive and public easement that has been acquired by students of the university and by the public at large. An easement by a prescription occurs when it's similar to adverse possession, which is squatting in common terms, where if you do something for more than 10 years in New York State, openly, adversely, without the permission of the owner, you end up with this right known as an easement. So instead of an adverse possession, you actually end up with the title of the land. Here you end up with the right to do something on the land of another. So in this case, the Cornell student body, as well as the public, has used the gorge without the university's permission for more than the 10 years required. And we know that going back through the history of the university, of photographs, of people who have been swimming there. And therefore, this easement right was created, and the university can't destroy it. By passing this, they would be impairing the easement, and by doing so, students could sue, the public could sue the university, potentially, to have this right restored. The university can be sued both for injunctive relief, to have the right declared so that they can go down there, and also for damages. The Cornell Police Department, although Cornell is a private institution, the CUPD, because they're deputized by the state, if they try to prevent people from exercising their easement right, they could potentially be sued under a particular section of the U.S. Code, under the Community Section 1983 claim, which is more commonly known as a federal civil rights lawsuit. And then potentially the university could also be sued in its own right as a co-conspirator under a similar chapter, 1985, which is part of the code. Additionally, as you pointed out, the university does own the land underneath the gorges, owns the riverbed, but the state of New York has an easement for the water. So they actually own the water rights. And some have suggested that by adding this to the code would merely be mirroring the city's ordinance. However, the city's ordinance is invalid under New York State law, most likely. Not most likely, in my opinion, it's invalid under New York State law. Only the state of New York has the right to to control its own, to control the waters in the public trust. The city of Ithaca cannot do that by its own code. It would be like the state of New York trying to pass a law that would affect the entire country. That power is not one which is granted to the city of Ithaca. It's held by the state of New York. Even the state of New York would have a hard time banning swimming in any piece of its waters due to the power of this public trust doctrine, that the waters are held in trust of the citizens of the state of New York. And this right to access the waters for recreational use has been recognized by the New York Court of Appeals, the highest court in the state of New York, in several recent decisions. The state of New York would have to demonstrate that the water was uniquely dangerous to a point where it's more dangerous than lakes or the ocean, which, you know, New York State residents and the public at large are allowed to swim in. The example that comes to mind would be swimming above Niagara Falls. That's clearly uniquely dangerous. If you go in the water, you will die. So the last thing would be closing off the waters. The remedy Cornell might try to employ here would be to block access to the water by putting up fencing along the gorges. However, as I stated earlier, because the public and Cornell students have an easement right, if Cornell did that, they would be their actions would be potentially illegal. So it seems to me that what Cornell is doing is, if their attempt to adopt this piece of the code would be potentially illegal, open the university up to potential liability and potential litigation. So I also think to say that the Cornell Police Department, just we'll put it on the books, but the Cornell Police Department won't enforce it, is naive at best and perhaps in bad faith. I think it's clear that if this is put into the code, the Cornell Police Department certainly will enforce it zealously. But again, I would hear more just to speak to some of the potential
and by adding just this amendment, that itself would impair the movement?
That is correct. By doing this, it would be the same as if Cornell were to block off the gorge with the fence. So that also would be another way in which they could impair the easement rights of the students and the public at large.
Thank you. Yeah, I have two questions, actually, somewhat related. Who then does have the right to revoke this easement right? Is it the state then that can pass a law against it? How does that?
No, it's a private land right.
Okay, so that can never go away then? Presumably?
Not without the permission of the easement holder, so the students and the public.
Okay. Well, presuming then we are representatives of the students, so do we then not have the ability to do that?
Well, I mean, I think it depends how you. Easements by prescription are not recorded, but who exactly is the holder of the easement right is a matter for court.
Sure. And then the second thing is, do you believe Cornell is open by not having kind of signage around the board and stating the risk and so forth to wrongful death lawsuits and things of the like?
I mean, it's. This is Adam, he's also a Cornell law student who works for the Judicial Code office.
I don't know if he's spoken with the University Counsel's office, I'm not sure. But there's a concept in tort law, it's an act omission distinction. You can actually write to Cornell endeavors to stop students from going down in the gorge, that's an act. You can be held liable for that. You actually, funnily, can't be held liable for an omission. And students going down to the gorge seem to fall to me here. Again, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not offering legal advice, we're simply presenting our opinions. It comes under the doctrine of implied secondary assumption of risk. Students know that the gorge is safe, unsafe, and I mean, it's visually clear that it's a dangerous task just to swim in the pool is or going to swim in the beaches, and you're going down to meet the risk, knowing fully that there is a risk that exists.
I guess my question in response to, I guess, what you guys were saying, I know last year we discussed a couple things on campus in the student assembly, such as concealed carry of weapons and so forth, and we were talking about, you know, our rights in the U.S. Constitution and specifically what we cannot and can do on campus. In terms of Cornell University sort of, I guess, being held liable for this, since we're a private institution, does that exempt in any way? Does that allow us to make our own sort of, I guess, rules that for what's going on campus? Because I feel as though, you know, yeah, technically by the Constitution I'm allowed to carry a gun, but I'm not allowed to do that necessarily on campus because of rules. And I'm not going to sue Cornell because of that. So.
Right, so just for clarification,
Cornell is also public. It's not just private.
Well,
so
Well, I know it's public and private, but actually this issue has been litigated for purposes of what's known as the state accurate action doctrine. Whether the university is a public or a private institution, it's considered to be private. Even though it receives a lot of money from the state of New York, it has some public units, it's still considered to be private.
Okay. All of the units, all Cornell, is all private university. Each district, we receive funding from the state in some area, but the university is private.
Okay. And you're quite right, the university has the power to, even though you can carry a gun, the university can tell you they can't. But in this case, this particular land use right is a very powerful right. It can't be abridged by the university. And if they try to, they would be open to it.
And then I guess my next question would be, just listening to sort of how you described the law, in terms of, you know, being here for 10 years, an individual that was here for 10 years, seeing that, I guess, students leave every 4 years, does that mean that every 4 years you're starting a new clock, per se, to see, have you been here for 10 years? Have I been squatting on the land, per se? And since students, a specific, you know, law-abiding student, or whatever you want to say it, is not here for longer than 10 years, does that mean that Cornell can say that's not, or law, by law, you know, you personally haven't been here for 10 years, so you have no right to sue me?
That's an excellent question. It would depend how you define the class of students. In this case, I think you would be defined as the class of students as Cornell students. However, I think the fact that there's a public event, and we know that the public goes down because one of the persons who drowned was an Ithaca resident. So obviously, there is not only Cornell students who go down, there's also the public. Because Cornell has failed to close this off to the public, the public has an easement right, which is perhaps a more powerful argument. So the university, in theory, by passing this, the university would be forbidding Cornell students from doing what the public at large could do.
And students themselves might. It's not clear yet.
I mean, that's the way I would construe it. There's some case law to support that. But again, the public even is a much clearer case, and perhaps a much more powerful argument.
Well, I'm not a lawyer. I totally disagree with what you're saying. Adverse possession is usually when two different property owners, one is using someone else's property for over 10 years, and then he says, I've been maintaining this property. It should be mine now. That's the law of adverse possession. With the logic that you're presenting, it is suggesting that we can't ever close a trail. And, you know, that's ridiculous to be able to say that, because it's been used for over 10 years that we are unable to make a change to our trail system because we have been allowing people to access it for a certain period of time. So, one more point. There needs to be a change to this, and whether or not it's this particular approach or not is, I guess, what will be decided. But what we wanted to avoid was a regulation that says it is illegal to hike off trail, because that would have impact to all of our educational programs and our research programs, for which Cornell Plantation provides services for faculty and students every year. And short of being able to limit this scope to just the areas of concern where the safety is, if we have no other recourse, then our next available option is to say it's illegal to hike off the trail. And we really are wanting to avoid that for a number of reasons. But, you know, that one way or another, there needs to be some kind of a change to be able to impress upon everyone the safety issue above and beyond the other educational efforts that we're trying to put in place.
Well, just to answer your first point, Cornell couldn't change its trail system. This is not my theory. This is how the long state of New York operates. For example, one of our peer institutions, Harvard, closes all of its public streets one day a year to avoid this exact problem. That way they break up the continuity of the prescriptive easements and they retain the titles of the streets that are within their campus. So they do this intentionally to prevent this sort of plan.
Is it Harvard in Massachusetts?
It is, but this is a common law. This is a common law theory. This is something that predates even the founding of the United States.
But isn't common law something that was set by the courts in the state differently?
Right, but New York and Massachusetts both follow the common law approach. So that's an example of why it's a very powerful right once it's acquired and very hard to return to the original holder. For example, if someone, people have mentioned voting issues, if someone were to put in a vote north of, upstream, they have a right under New York State law to vote down, portage around any of the falls and keep going. So someone who wanted to float in a raft in the area in question would be entirely protected by New York State law.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but a number of the deaths occurred in a very specific location. And you tell me we couldn't bar students from going in that exact specific location if we, narrowly tailored this amendment to address that one specific location, which has produced numerous deaths and could be considered, and death could be construed as adverse to the educational mission of the university. That's a compelling state interest, educating youth and knowledge.
Well, the university would have a compelling state interest, because the Eastman right has been already acquired. Students have been swimming exactly in that dangerous spot, and therefore, and the public has been as well. Therefore, the Eastman addresses that particular location.
Can you give an example of a court case in New York State where a court has said that a private organization can't bar people from swimming on waters for a demonstrated danger?
I can give you an example of a case where the most recent court case on the subject is a case from the Adirondacks. Excuse me, 1 second. It was a case in which there was a section of the Moose River in the Adirondacks that this particular private landowner tried to close off the waters for swimming and for paddling. And the New York Court of Appeals in a 1998 decision stated that was impermissible.
Well, yeah, but isn't like the Moose River, it's a recreational river that's
public land. Yeah, but the gorge is public land. The waters within the gorge are within the public trust. They're public land. Even though Cornell retains the title of the underlying riverbed, any lake, stream, within the state of New York is owned by the state. The water is owned by the state.
I think it's also useful to differentiate that this one obviously applied to Cornell students. So presumably someone from Ithaca that came over wouldn't be affected by this idea under the city ordinance. But again, that city ordinance is not to be enforced. So.
I mean, I guess it would be helpful if we just had Kathy Zoner here to talk this out.
If I may, just the one thing that I'm kind of getting from all this is that I agree that I live in PG, so I go down to those gorges quite a lot during the summer, or used to be, for their walled off.
Okay.
And that one section of the river where that waterfall is, if the water is a little bit faster than normal, is extremely dangerous. And I think there's something to be said for some kind of system, whether it's someone monitoring the gorges to put up a notice if the water is too swiftly moving. Again, that's a little bit hard because of the changing conditions so quickly. But something for that one area, albeit that I understand a lot of legal things behind it, but assuming that nobody's going to go out and find all of that, something to simply that section off that one area, that one waterfall area, as probably not a good idea to swim there. I think it's perhaps a good idea, but again, this is slightly different.
Well, let me reply to that, because if there is some kind of a system that whatever form it takes, it implies then that those conditions are safe. And then if there's a death, when that is suggested that it's safe to do, now the university is in much greater liability risk than they were before any kind of system was there. And so that applies to that. Or if you say, well, how about if we just don't allow swimming in the area below the suspension bridge where the other deaths have occurred, but we go to some other place, and that can be some sanctioned swimming area. And then we're by default saying now that's safe to swim there. And then there's a death. And so that's a problem. And I would say that probably the reason of all of the places it's safest to swim is BB Lake. But the place that isn't is where everybody swims. And they jump, dive off Sackett Bridge, and people get hurt there all the time, and somebody's going to break their neck and die there. It's just a matter of time in that location as well. So that's why that one is there, plus the dam. You don't want to be swimming right above the dam and get sucked over the top. So by giving an inch in any of one of those ways, it extends the university's risk and liability significantly to the point where it precludes those alternatives, unfortunately.
Can I just interrupt? That was Kathy's owner. She's on her way. She's trying to get here as quick as possible. She said she'd be about probably another 5 minutes. She's cutting traffic coming up the hill. Yeah, that's what I told her.
There are places you can go that are public and I suppose state or federal or whatever, where it said undertow extremely dangerous, no swimming without no swimming permitted, signs up saying that, or sometimes you'll see a sign saying lifeguards not available here, swimming at your own risk. People die in those places. I'm just curious as to why it is one can't adopt that view. There are lots of hazardous things that go on campus, working with chemicals, riding horses. And when you ride a horse, for example, if Cornell has a sign up that says, equestrian law is that you ride at your own risk. You fall off, you break your neck, you can't sue Cornell because you've ridden at your own risk. I don't know whether you want to put up a sign that says swim at your own risk, or whether you just say, some kind of very strong language that makes people realize that if they get hurt or they die, it's been their choice.
That's part of this multifaceted approach that I already mentioned. So suffice it to say, one way or another, there will be something of that nature in those places that you can have access to these areas. But
You're talking about ponds now and places like that?
No, I'm talking about the area under the suspension bridge at Fall Creek Gorge specifically.
There'll be signs of the same.
There will be. And I can't say when. And obviously, we're hoping that the university financial situation doesn't negatively affect some of the efforts that we're trying to see come to fruition on the items. But there's two parts, I think, to the comment that we have there. The minimum that Cornell can do to reduce its liability risk and say that, you were warned,
And then there's the, we don't want to have another death.
Right. Now about that last.
And that
right.
is what we've been asked to have be that goal.
No, you've been asked to. By whom?
Well, I would say it's been kind of a consensus from a number of different parts of Cornell,
right.
including the senior administration, part of the Gorge Safety Task Force,
part of the
risk
safety.
Management. You know, there's.
I guess what I'm saying is that that doesn't mean that we have to vote this, because you know, the first course of action seems like it's going to. I mean, it's if you had this on the books and somebody swam in there and died, what good would it be? You know what I mean? Well, you know, you could say it was in the campus code, you shouldn't have done it. And it renders the campus code a little bit, it undercuts in some ways the code and in ways that are, because it, I mean, you can't really use the code to, it's like an anti-smoking regulation, but you know, you can't, the warning on the pack is enough from my point of view, you know what I mean? We can have a warning on the pack, but the code shouldn't be used like that.
I mean, I could read through a lot of the items that are on that code and say a lot of those are unenforceable, and they happen all the time, and they're broken all the time. But that doesn't mean that they should, because that's the case, that we shouldn't include them or have that be part of the code. So,
I really like what Marty's been saying. I look, this is like the penultimate, because nothing's more, there's got to be smarter ways to do this. And I think that education is notification. And I just get really concerned with, you know, things that have been brought up. That my concern is not to see if it's doing anything wrong. My concern here is that make sure that Cornell's interests are protected and that the students are protected. And I think this is really setting up some questions for them. So, you know, in fact, the city has a dream, and let the city enforce this law. And let that be called into question. But I really don't want to put Cornell in a situation that it has to, you know, defend itself against something which may very well have very good reasons.
And
you're going to
hear less part of your statement.
Potentially, well, we've heard some things that, you know, this could possibly break the law.
What could possibly break the law?
This amendment. Yeah.
Because
well,
why?
Well, here's the thing. You know,
well, I mean, because the public has acquired likely acquired a prescriptive easement to use that wording. As have Cornell students in the class.
I'm not sure I understand
that. Because Cornell students in the public at large have been using the gorge the trailways down the gorge and swimming in the gorge the longer than the required statutory period in New York, 10 years, without the permission of the university, and therefore the public easement right being created in students as a class of individuals in the public at large.
Okay, well, that's a good argument to take in court, but it's still illegal on the basic things to swim in the gorge at this point. So, I mean, basically, the only reason this is introduced is the same reason we did disorderly conduct. The law already exists. You already stand to be cited for it. You can argue your case in court as to why it does or doesn't stand. And at this point, it can be a conviction on your record of a violation of city code or nothing. And we will be enforcing it in other waters on campus. So why just this one? I mean, it's just a property issue that we don't enforce it here.
Well, you also the insurgents that became a chair, but I also believe that the city really lacks the power to pass this code.
The city already has it.
Yeah, well, just because they have it on the book doesn't mean it's constitutional. The state of New York owns, it has, well, the Cornell University owns the riverbed.
Actually, they don't.
They do hold title under New York State law. The water rights are held by the state in easement in the public trust.
My understanding is that's not the case, and that's why we went for this. Because if that's the case, then never mind. Forget it. We won't enforce the law, and we'll enforce the law.
Well, Crowell holds the title to the land underneath.
Not according to the tax research that was done by the City of Ithaca attorneys and the Cornell attorneys.
Okay. So either way, that's better.
To clarify the language, but correct me if I'm wrong, Kathy. Cornell owns the path in down to the gorge.
They own to the high water mark.
And then the water is the state, and the land underneath is the city.
I believe that's correct.
All right, that was
important. And remember, with the municipal government, it doesn't matter who owns the land; it's whose jurisdiction area. We're talking about a jurisdictional area. So somebody else can own the land, but the jurisdictional area remains the city. It's within the city boundaries, the municipal boundaries.
We're not really talking about jurisdiction, we're talking about power to enact that's separate. The city couldn't pass an ordinance that affected a federal military installation within its boundaries.
Right, and that has nothing to do with federal.
Sure, the state is owned by the state. The state owns waters, they can't regulate. Only the New York Department of Environmental Protection can regulate waters within the state of New York. So, but to say that we're passing a campus code to mirror an invalid city ordinance is, I think, a really lousy argument.
Well, you have to first prove that that's invalid. I mean, you haven't proven it invalid.
I mean, so that's true. You could go to court and potentially have it found to be invalid.
You could potentially argue any one of a number of laws to find it invalid, including the drinking age. It's not been done yet. It's still illegal.
Well, I mean, the drinking age has gone.
Well,
the
city of Ithaca
ordinance
is not.
Okay, well, I guess when that challenge comes forward, we'll have that opportunity.
Let me ask you a question. Chief Zellman, you told me and several of the judicial council, I was going to have with you last Friday, that I believe CUP is moving towards training so that they can enforce some of the city ordinances.
All of the city ordinances.
Including the city ordinance against swimming in the pools.
Right.
Then CUP's interest in this. I was wondering if you could speak to CUPD's interest in this provision.
CUPD doesn't really have an interest in it. It's actually because it's to the benefit of the students, staff, and faculty who might fall under this code provision, so they have an alternative adjudication through the judicial administrator. It doesn't matter to us whether we enforce the city code or not. The issue for Cornell Police is going to boundary and ownership, as was discussed over here, by putting in the code that removes that issue. So. Every other water on campus, we will be enforcing the swimming city ordinance. So we're just trying to make it equitable so that if you're swimming in Castillo Creek or BB Lake, you're going to have the same adjudication opportunities as if you were in Tulsa.
I just, as an assistant judicial code counselor, I suspect to voice my opinion. I think that's fair. I would say that the flip side of the same coin is that if CUPD is enforcing the city ordinance, they're under a criminal law evidentiary regime. Whereas if CUPD is enforcing the campus code of conduct ordinance, the evidentiary rules are much more relaxed. As any of you know, and maybe rightly so, that's a disciplinary goal of the university, it's legitimate, but it's a much less rigorous evidentiary regime under the campus code of conduct than it would be under a criminal law prosecution under the city ordinance.
So I have a point of clarification. All you're trying to do with adding this to the campus code of conduct is give the students who can be the people who are Cornell affiliated have another way to adjudicate this infraction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, really.
Cornell University policy versus criminal, or potential to be
right.
Criminal.
And remembering, of course, that any other waters on the campus we don't actually even need this in the code, which is to enforce the city ordinance. It gives the opportunity to make it be equitable across the board.
What are the other waters on campus, Kathy?
Cascadilla Creek, part of UV Lake.
Well, Cascadilla Creek is there.
No, I'm sorry. They're just point of clarification. Again, when we put it in the code, we want to make sure that everybody knows what the waters are.
Does that include Flat Rock?
No.
That's in the town of Edison.
Okay. And we don't own the property
Well, it doesn't matter.
The way it's written, the idea is to make it within the city, to reflect the city ordinance, which is within the city. So it wouldn't affect the flat route.
I just have a point of clarification. Are you enforcing this now? Just it's without the, it's just not in the campus code of conduct. Is that what you're saying? Or you need the campus code of conduct and able to enforce this?
The Cornell police can enforce the city code anywhere but Fall Creek because of the ownership dispute. It makes it an someone could argue whether or not we did or did not have authority to act within there solely based on the city code.
So
in all the other waters, we don't need that.
Okay, so in all the other waters, have you ever enforced it?
Nope, we have not been. We've been warnings. We've all been warnings.
Okay, and is that what you wish to keep happening with this new...
We wish people to stop swimming in those dangerous waters. And as part of that movement, along with education, along with signage, along with educational... features, pamphlets, flyers, videos, podcasts. Along with that comes consequence, and this is the consequence.
So it won't be just warnings anymore. Now you're going to step it up and you start getting gay.
As it always has been, case by case, but I think you can count on an increased enforcement issue that both by the city police and by Cornell police.
And it's just one more question, sorry. If this doesn't get passed, would you still think of increasing the... changing from warnings to just increasing the punishments to whatever
you keep it. I just want to be careful in saying it's not changing. We're responding to several deaths within dangerous waters on Cornell. So we're not just changing it with no reason. So I want to be careful about language here. It's not changing. The discretion's not going to be removed. There's no zero tolerance. Absent any need to do something along the lines of some specialized patrols, we are going to deal with the situation as we come upon them. Believe me, we suffer under no misperception that this is going to end swimming in the gorges forever. Nothing is going to. We also have an eradicated stealing on campus. We also have an eradicated trespassing on campus. The existence of laws does not therefore prevent the illegal action. We get it. We understand that. What we're trying to do is give people as much notice as possible that these are dangerous waters, that people have died within them. We're trying to do our best to prevent those people from unknowingly entering into those waters as a dangerous act, and giving some consequence to those that choose to disobey the law. And the consequence already exists. Everywhere but the Fall Creek, this doesn't pass through, everywhere but Fall Creek, it'll be Cornell police writing the city ordinance, and in the Fall Creek, we'll just call the city police, and they'll write there.
And then, just so I'm understanding it, if that happens, a student or the officer would not have the option to...
No, the way, if it's not in the code...
It would be outside of the code. It wouldn't be a part of the code, so a student it would automatically go to the city.
Right.
Which
theoretically,
has the potential to be on a record.
Theoretically, a trespass violation could be written for swimming in the waters of. I mean, we're trying to match the violation for what the true violation is. I don't want to stretch any definition just to achieve a goal. The goal here is to educate people that these are dangerous waters, they're not permitted to swim in, and to enforce that. Until and unless that changes.
Kathy, I want to clarify something. You, Cornell police can now write citations for violations, excuse me, can cite violations of campus code off of campus.
So that's not true.
I thought the new code.
The code reaches to off campus.
That's what
I'm Cornell saying. Police's authority remains on Cornell police on Cornell property.
The JA.
So the JA can take an Ithaca Police Department.
Oh, you can't go to College Town. You can't cite people in
Correct.
College Town.
We do joint patrols, but we would not be making a direct referral from there. The city police
I see.
Raise the awareness to the JA's office that there was a serious case.
Thank you, good point.
The thing that concerns me actually is that knowing whether we're kind of somewhat making a choice between whether we want people who are violating this to fall under the regime of the Ithaca kind of city court system or the Cornell judicial administration. The problem that I have with falling under Cornell is that, you know, for example, you don't really have a right to an attorney here, things like that, and knowing those complicated legal issues we've just brought forward, that seems very much kind of contrary to what I would want, possibly. I much rather have it that students kind of face the consequences of knowing they have full legal rights as opposed to being thrown into the mix now.
But there's no legal ramifications. So
there are ramifications within Cornell.
You do have a right to representation.
I think Mark makes a good point that I was trying to make, which is that under the criminal law evidentiary regime, which is city ordinance, the violation number zero places you in, if you're swimming the board, if the city police get you, that's a much more difficult standard for law enforcement to meet than for the Cornell police to refer you to the JA. There are no evidentiary, no hearsay prohibitions in the hearings. Now, so it's a trade-off when you think about it. It can be resolved under the JA if there's this campus code provision, and maybe that's, a very simple life penalty proportional to the offense, I don't know if that's probation or what. I don't know what kind of penalty exactly would be imposed under this campus code provision. I think that's unclear. But the flip side of getting that lesser penalty than, say, the ticket or ordinance you might get from the city police is that the JA has a much lower evidentiary threshold that they have to meet. It's clear and convincing evidence beyond reasonable doubt. Hearsay and certain types of testimony and evidence are admissible in university hearing board decisions that are no ways admissible in trials. So I think that's the difference.
So I guess I would like to know in what situation do you think a citation is going to be issued to someone where the case is going to be based on any problems with evidence?
With all due respect, I have to preserve my confidentiality. JCC clients that I see have cases that are prosecuted by the JA and end up in sanctions that have evidence, hearsay, uncorroborated, unreliable witness and informant tips that would be thrown out of court relatively quickly.
I don't think it's the intent, and the intent is
certainly not, but mistakes are made.
Okay, how is there a mistake made when an officer is down on the floor and they see people in the water and they...
That may not always be the case. What if the officer is 200 yards away and sees a person with a red shirt with brown hair and then sees some people fitting that description walking away from the gorge later as soon as the officer comes out of the
floor? I feel like you're splitting hairs on that. If you'd rather go to court, just tell me. When you come out of the water, you'd rather go to court. I'll write you a city ordinance. Not a problem. But I would say that by and large, the vast majority of students that I run into, given the choice between going to a criminal court system for any level violation, criminal or not, and going to the JA, by and large, they would prefer to go to the JA and not go to the criminal court system. And I know you get different cases, but that's, again, you're dealing with a very small cross-section of the population where, given the opportunity, would you rather go to city court, would you rather go to the judicial administrator? The people that we run into, most of them would rather be handled by the judicial ministry because there's no legal sanctions, there's no mark on the record of a person's, criminal history. It remains vacant. Most of the time, non-repeat violations are expunged from a student's term that they're gone after 4 years. And a conviction on even a violation of city ordinance is going to last with you through a lifetime. And people don't always know what their careers are going to end up with. I think that's the argument that's made on the other side.
I still don't like this addition because I think the words are ambiguous. The words are ambiguous. But I think should we pass it, I would like to see a map go along with this because unless you pay property taxes, I think it's impossible to know what's the city of it unless the town of it.
The information is readily accessible.
Yeah, I think you would have to go along with it.
I'm not sure that we put that in the code, the map, because I'm not quite sure a lot of people read the code. We've discussed that before. And it's usually when one gets in trouble that they're reading the code. But there are other educational, and I think that goes to the point that both Kathy and Todd are saying. This is one piece of multiple opportunities for education and enforcement, that it's not just one thing. It's the quick tour that was developed this past year to talk about these types of safety issues that's up on the newstudents.cornell. It's the gorge brochure that Rodney was handing out that's handed out. There are multiple pieces, and that's where you have the opportunity, and I don't know if you saw the brochure, but that's where one might have the opportunity to look at the map and know where the city starts or ends. I'm not quite sure that it would be read in the code because we know it's different. That's how they get it.
But I'm not quite sure that there's an issue. There are places where the waters are accessible largely accessible waters within the city, with the exception of Flat Rock and a portion of DB Lake. We don't generally get people swimming in DB Lake except off the Stone Bridge. That's actually in the town of Ithaca. We don't generally write for swimming in the waters. What we're writing for is trespass or reckless endangerment, depending on the situation, people jumping off the Stone Bridge into the waters of the lake. So it's not going to really change how we operate. It's just going to not afford an opportunity for students to have access to the system for this particular mileage.
So when you write, are you writing the ticket or are you referring to the JA for people jumping off the bridge on DB Lake?
Generally, well again, depending on the circumstance, generally we're then giving warnings, but repeat offenders are either, depending again, whether or not they're a student, obviously, if they're a student or a faculty or staff, then we generally send to the JA. Yeah.
So you said that right now Cornell Police doesn't enforce the code at all.
Correct.
But this would give Cornell Police the ability to enforce the code off. So this would be the first time. Like, didn't you say part of Fall Creek is not actually Cornell's campus?
I said the property's in dispute.
It's in dispute.
Right, and so the high water mark is what we think is understood. Right.
So this could mark an inflection point of giving CUPD the ability to.
I think it's challengeable, and it's worth challenging on its face, but our interest was in just making it equal and across the board, enforcement opportunities where you're in Capitol, we could be late for Fall Street.
I mean, it's still getting to me the point that which makes me feel very uncomfortable about this, is that this is, and I think there's serious questions about this, and is this the business that we want Cornell to be in, you know, if there's serious...
Saving lives and keeping people out of dangerous waters?
But I think the way to do that is through education and...
We tried it. I can't even tell you how many years we've been active.
But it sounds like there's going to step this up.
No, that's what's already happening. Already.
That there's signage...
There are burned flags on the side of the wall that says people have died in here, please don't swim.
Let the person's death not be in vain, and that they are the last person to die here. That's what that plaque says. And that message has changed the behavior. So, you know, all the education that we wish to be successful still isn't going to, in itself, be the entire answer to remedying this situation.
And I agree, death is a horrible, horrible thing. There are many activities that work themselves in terms of these things that you have the right and the liberty to do that. I just get really concerned about, you know, that trade-off. Right? And these are very important things. The law is here for a reason.
But there are no rights and liberties to that area.
There's been this much discussion about that.
But the law is as it states until challenged and therefore struck down. So you can have discussion all you want about it, but it's right now as it states, absent the removal of that law from the city code, it is a violation of swimming those waters.
Can I ask something about that, Alan? Here it says the path is closed during the following heavy rains into the entire winter. So is that like Harvard's closing the streets for one day?
You can have a season. For example, like I said, you could pick someone's apples in the fall, but don't do the example of a season that only occurs in the season.
Are we getting close to a vote?
I guess I just have some questions in terms of some of the students' questions that we've been receiving over the past week. So a lot of students are wondering, you know, when we're talking about entering, with the purpose of swimming or bathing, does that mean students sitting on the side and dangling their feet are going to be JA'd?
I would venture to say that swimming or bathing are very definable terms. You can look them up. And putting your feet in the water while sitting on a rock's edge is more like we do. That's not the intent. invasion of uniformed officers ripping people out by the collars and, you know, no, your feet are wet, you're going to the JA. We don't have the staffing to support that. I'm down now 7 people. The city's down at least 6 people. We're going to do what we can do to help the educational aspect of this through some enforcement as necessary. And sometimes that means we'll have a lot of people down there. Sometimes it'll mean we'll be responding to a call from a complaint. And sometimes that means that we won't be down there. People will likely be swimming and God opens the problem drowns again. Because we're really trying hard to not have that happen again. And I guess if I could channel anybody, I'd like to channel the state police driver, the diver who spoke and did the article. I mean, those guys almost died, and they're equipped. They had breathing apparatus. They had ropes tied to them. They're a trained rescue recovery expert, but they got sucked into the hole and almost didn't get out.
Has that been on video tape or something?
It's in a Cornell, or it's an article in the which magazine that did that article.
On the website, it would be very powerful. Our present plan is, as part of orientation week, there's a gathering of all the students at Bailey Hall, and we've been given an hour to do gorge safety education, and that is going to be a feature of
that actually did happen in the state of Vermont about 10 years ago. State police diver went in to recover, and he himself got pulled in and died. They couldn't get him out. 2 kids, 1, I think, 3 and 1, 7.
And, the issue
and it was on TV
waters
that they were,
yeah.
The TV was covering it.
Yeah.
As
the
it
issue
happened.
With these waters is that's how it is one day, and then an hour later, it's not.
Decided to suddenly
prohibition, no doubt fewer people would die from alcohol. But we choose to have alcohol knowing that that is something our society has deemed that we have the right to consume. I think, again, this is a trade-off we're going to go back
right,
and
forth. But there is a right. But, yeah, nowhere in the Constitution does it say you can drink beer.
I mean, it also says in the Ninth Amendment that
it's not a right.
I'm hoping to. Why? Would you like to vote?
Unless we call a question, we have to keep going with.
I think this is honestly.
And there's 15 minutes left. Do we have any other business?
I actually have a question. When is our next meeting?
The 29th.
Ron, do you want to?
I will need a lot of people here for that meeting.
I'm John Sutter. I was elected to be undergraduate representative next year, so I'm going to be going to meetings and stuff to stay on top of everything so I can kind of hit the ground running next year for those of you who don't know who I am. And I just kind of want to throw my two cents in there, too, and say, you know, we're going back and forth, but, you know, obviously, yeah, the, you know, one death is too many. That's why I think, you know, all of these educational programs that we're expanding and really focusing on more, I think that's really great and something we should continue to do. But again, we keep going back and forth with this trade-off, and okay, well, how far do we want to go infringing, you know, individual liberties to swim in the gorge and to do these things?
It's
and
just private property. Your liberties are not restricted on private property.
And just because, it may be against the city ordinance, well, we don't necessarily have to echo a city ordinance that we may disagree with and may be invalid.
Well, that's true, and then you can go to city court and argue it because that's what the citation is going to read. I mean, it really doesn't change that much. You're still going to get cited. You're just going to lose the you lose the opportunity to avail yourself of this system. That's it.
Yeah. In Vermont, the name of the gorge is Huntington Gorge, and like the state said, if anybody else drowns in there, they're going to have to, the family or friends of somebody else, the state police is not going to send divers in to get the body out.
And what do you mean? Weeks. Bodies stay in it. Weeks.
Well, actually, from a deterrent standpoint, then, it's interesting to think that, you know, what we were talking about before, what would deter people more from doing something, and if the argument goes that it deters more than it's enforced by the city, then perhaps it's better that the city remains the jurisdiction under which to handle these, or will deter students more, because, I mean, who's going to be afraid of the GA versus kind of a court?
I don't know. Well, right now, there's limited consequence because there's limited availability. But look, the city's on notice that that's a problematic water, and they're going to take steps to help increase their enforcement in that area. So it's just, like I said, it just won't afford you the opportunity for this. So what we'll be doing is exposing students to the city judicial system, and that'll be the choice of the assembly.
I guess mine is related to that last question a little bit. I'm trying to think of how to word it. You know what? Never mind. Come back to me. I'll try to word it in a way.
Maybe you can answer questions.
No?
We can't do that.
No problem.
Where you can do this question,
are we?
Well, the city can arrest for any one of it under the code, so why would you do it right now?
Well, there's no such thing as a proxy in a
So then I guess my question is, again, kind of related. So, say this was not put in, then it would be completely, you could still do the same exact.
The question was asked whether there are proxies in a deliberative body, and I checked it on the in our rules, and there's no.
Just in practice, we had to work.
Okay. Can we call a question?
Anybody can call a question.
Yeah.
Okay. Can I dissent? Just to get one.
No, we have a question has been called. We have to have a second to the question.
I think I'm still allowed to dissent, though. If I want to explain my dissent, I should have a minute to explain my dissent.
That's
the only rule. All right.
Okay.
Hold on to the call.
I second.
Okay. Voting right. On the call to question. All in favor?
Sorry.
All opposed? Call to question.
We're voting on the vote. We're voting to
call a question. All in favor of calling a question, which means that we proceed immediately to a vote on this motion.
All in favor.
By show of hands, please call the question.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8? Opposed?
Yeah, opposed.
1. 1 opposed?
I abstain.
And 1 abstention. Go, moving on to vote on this resolution to amend the campus code of conduct. All in favor?
I show
hands so I can count. Opposed? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 opposed. Abstentions? 1, 2, 3, 4 abstentions. That fails.
What fails? Motion fails.
Motion fails. To amend the campus code of conduct.
It's 0 to 4.
Any other business?
0 to 6.
Okay. Can I have a motion to adjourn?
I will re-adjourn.
Second.
Motion to adjourn from Pay, seconded by Leon. All in favor? Unanimous.
Yeah, preferably. Okay.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.